Welcome to this episode of City Talks, where we'll be looking at the politics of cities ahead of next month's local elections. The results of last year's general election caught many of us by surprise. Instead of the hung parliament promised by the pollsters, we ended up with a majority Conservative government. Some of the biggest surprises of the night were the inroads the Conservatives made into urban Labour territory, winning places like Bolton West and Derby North, and obviously the ousting of Ed Balls in Morley and Outwood. The local elections on the 5th of May are likely to be different, given that they often provide an opportunity for voters to give the government of the day a good kicking. So notwithstanding the unpredictability of these things, what can we expect? What impact will Labour's new leader have on the party's performance? Will the Northern Powers help to get Conservative candidates elected in England? And with the prospect of half a dozen new city region mayors being elected next year, how will the politics of cities change as places gain new powers and responsibilities and indeed profile? Joining me to discuss these questions, I have Tom Clarkson, research team leader at ComRes, John Elledge, editor of City Metric, and David Kirkby, senior research fellow at Bright Blue. Tom, if I can turn to you first, most places in England will have a third of councils up for election. Some, like Sheffield, Bristol and Peterborough, will have all of them. Do you have any intelligence on what we can expect to happen in these contexts? Or is it just too difficult to tell when we think about these sorts of elections?
I think it promises to be a really interesting year in terms of local elections. As you say, typically local elections are an opportunity for the public to give the government of the day a kicking. But as we know, Jeremy Corbyn is deeply unpopular beyond his sort of core fan base, if you will. And therefore, it's not necessarily true to say that the opposition is going to do well this time. I think also he has a divided party behind him, particularly at a parliamentary level, and whether he can generate the support he needs to actually do well at these elections is going to be really interesting.
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting point, John, that you know, despite local elections meant to be about local issues, it's often national issues and national individuals that seem to sway how the local electorate go. What's your kind of thought on that?
I think that's absolutely true. I think often local elections and indeed European elections are used as a proxy for people's views on the government of the day. So as you noted in your introduction, there is generally this cycle where they will be used to punish the government and they don't necessarily reflect on what people really think. One interesting sign of this, I think, is that Boris Johnson is about to stop being London's mayor. He's obviously got his sights on a big job, possibly the big job. And suddenly we're getting a lot of briefing from inside the Conservative Party that he's not up to the job, that he's a little bit of a dodgy figure, that there's some questions about his past, he's not good on detail. And you kind of find yourself wondering, this guy's been running one of the world's most important cities for the past 8 years. Why did this not bother anybody before?
What's your conclusion to your own question?
I mean, we often hear about how London-centric the media and British politics is, and that's very clearly true.
Yeah.
But they're still not interested in the niceties of local government. I think it's less about disinterest in London and more about the fact that our national debate is people are much more interested in the horse race and the parliamentary soap opera and who's up and who's down. They don't really care about policy. And running a city is actually a very sort of policy-based job. You kind of need to get to grips with a certain amount of detail. And most people just don't have the inclination to do that. So I think the public perception of Boris Johnson is much less about how good a mayor he's been and much more about how good he is on television.
Yeah, that's a good point. David, what's your point on the local elections, national picture?
The interesting point, just to pick up on, you were saying, obviously, the Labour Party is quite divided right now and it's very fractious. There's a sense in which that may benefit Labour in a local context. Namely, if Corbyn is so deeply unpopular, as the polls certainly suggest he is, certain more local parts of the Labour Party, not disaffiliating, but perhaps distancing themselves, as we've seen, for example, Sadiq Khan do in London, just putting a bit of distance between himself and Corbyn. It may be that a bit of fractiousness may actually benefit Labour in that regard.
I mean, but are we talking about voters at the margins here, Tom? Or are we? I mean, it's hard to envisage, for example, the Labour voters of Manchester, in a sense, saying actually I dislike Corbyn so much that I'm not going to vote for Labour. We're not talking about that sort of vote, are we?
I think local elections are interesting because it's not about swing voters in the way that a general election is, where you have, you know, your proportion of the electorate who could go either way.
Yeah.
Local elections are typically quite low turnout, and really it's about getting your core vote out.
Right.
So the parties will be trying to do that over the next couple of months and make sure that that they get their core voters there. And it's whether Corbyn can do that, whether those Labour supporters, you know, typically Labour supporters feel strongly enough about the Labour Party as a whole to turn up and vote.
Yeah.
And some undoubtedly will, but some may not.
May not. And David, so if some of the Sadiq is a good example, others are putting a little bit of distance between themselves and the National Labour, how does local Conservatives relate to National Conservatives? Are they, you know, do they want Cameron and Osborne to be close and involved, or do they want them to be slightly distanced to keep them away?
That's a good question. I mean, it's certainly true that within a Conservative context, the outlook of the leadership and people at the top of the party have not always exactly aligned with, if you like, the core interests in your local association. Having said that, Cameron, you know, the Prime Minister, is probably the most sort of powerful asset the Conservative Party has. Mm. So there is a bit of a dilemma there and a bit of a tension between, on the one hand, the Prime Minister not always aligning with what local associations want to see, perhaps, and their ideal leader. But having said that, on a national level, he is a hugely popular figure still, especially given how long now he's occupied that top position.
Yeah. John, what's yours? You know, Labour keeping themselves slightly apart, Conservatives, you know, Cameron's still an asset for local Conservatives. What's your perspective on that?
I mean, my instinct is that it's actually quite difficult to make any party political predictions, because I think the main message of these elections is actually probably going to be about turnout. Because as Tom was saying, local elections are very low turnout elections on the whole, and I think if natural Labour voters are not enthused about Jeremy Corbyn, they're probably not going to start voting Tory in Liverpool or Manchester or Leeds. The Lib Dems aren't really a factor anymore, right. Poor Lib Dems. So I think they're probably just going to stay at home, which they might have been half-minded to anyway, because it's only a local election. So I think it's probably going to be difficult to read too much into the results beyond people who are a bit annoyed with the whole political class right now.
But does that mean then that there's a possibility that, for example, the Conservatives might pick up more council seats as a result of them being more energised to vote than maybe Labour not? I mean, what's your sense on that? Because one of the issues, obviously, we'll come on to in a minute, is about the degree to which the Conservatives can and will make inroads into the urban vote, either more generally, but particularly in the north. But do you see that happening as a result, David?
As John was saying, it's always difficult to make sort of specific predictions. I mean, the one thing to say is that the conception that the Tories do poorly in the north is somewhat true, but more accurately, it's an urban problem the Tories have. So I suppose the question is how the Tories can make inroads into urban areas, and the challenge then becomes one largely about, say, the different kind of demographics which you get within an urban area as opposed to non-urban areas. Questions around how they can appeal to maybe different age groups and people of different ethnicity as well.
Mm. I think the elephant in the room is the European referendum, and actually the extent to which your typical sort of party machinery in terms of campaigning will be focusing on the local elections at the start of May, or whether, you know, people who will be going door to door will actually be thinking more about the referendum and trying to go around, you know, knocking doors for whichever side they're on.
Yeah. And what's, in terms of your experience thus far, where are we more focused on, or the local organisation more focused on the EU referendum than they are on local elections?
Possibly. I think certainly for some, you know, this is a once in a lifetime opportunity particularly for the Brexiteers, and you know, they'll be doing everything possible to get their vote out at that referendum and not necessarily be spending as much time on the doorstep ahead of local elections as normal.
Yeah, John.
I'm wondering if this could actually have an impact on Tory turnout, though, because there is quite a big division between the leadership of the Conservative Party, who are primarily voting in, and a lot of the membership who would really much rather that we were sort of heading full steam for the exit. Given the local election is going to be 6 weeks before the European referendum, I wonder if actually there'll be a lot of natural Tory voters who don't feel the need to turn out for the party because they kind of want to punish David Cameron for being on the wrong side of this one.
So, messages there. Essentially, turnout could be a record low rather than necessarily a record high, which would be deeply dispiriting, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the thing to say on that is also that, of course, many of the most prominent Brexiteers are Conservatives as well. So whilst the leadership is, you know, somewhat behind remaining, of course, there are prominent people within the party who are also espousing Brexit. So how that sort of feeds into turnout is sort of difficult to predict.
What does this say about the state of local politics and local elections, and given that, you know, in a sense, a lot of it is just simply viewed through the lens of the national perspective. Is that the only way we should do it? Is that the only way we could do it, John?
I think there's been a sort of downward spiral in this one. I think over the years, power was taken from local government because people felt they weren't up to the job. But that kind of then hit people with sort of enthusiasm for getting involved in local government, which made a lot of local government worse managed than it was before.
Yeah.
So more power got taken away, and we kind of ended up in this position where, until very recently, things are now starting to change a little bit, we've ended up in a situation where, to a large extent, local councils have just been sort of service delivery organisations rather than actual political units. They're about sort of getting the bins emptied. They're not about setting a particular policy. Things like the Northern Powerhouse agenda and, you know, devolution to city regions and so on could, I think, start to change that. I think there is at least some engagement within London with the mayoralty and so on. So presumably we'll start seeing that happen in the other big city regions too as these new bodies get established. But I think it's incredibly unlikely that local issues are going to have more than the most marginal effect on local election results this time around.
Give me some good news, Tom.
Good news. well, I suppose the mayoralty is interesting.
Yeah.
And particularly in London, I think it's going to be a really interesting battle over the next few weeks. We talked about Sadiq Khan and Zach Goldsmith a bit.
Mm.
Typically, London is a sort of Labour-friendly zone. They have an inbuilt advantage if you look at sort of general election voting patterns.
Yeah.
It's whether Zach Goldsmith can sort of capture Boris's spirit, I suppose, and capture the imagination enough to overturn that.
Yeah. Your perspective, what's that tell? The broader point about the somewhat emasculated position that local politics has, is that fair or not, David?
So I think, Boris is very much the kind of leading indicator on where this sort of may head in the future. I mean, traditionally, as John said, local government has been kind of service delivery and so on, and maybe not as jazzy as kind of national politics. But Boris has kind of broken the mould on that. People don't associate Boris with service delivery. They associate
Boris
with...
There is, but
there's good and bad reasons for that. I mean, Boris has really tied himself to particular projects. When people think about Boris, they think about Boris bikes or, particular building projects or the Olympics, not service delivery. So I guess the interesting question is whether, local government with the expansion of, more combined authorities and metro mayors, whether it will, become a bit more Boris-y in that sense of not just being service delivery, but whether it will be about, particular initiatives and particular projects which people associate with a particular incumbent.
There's an interesting point about how I wonder whether that's, is that sort of so woven into Boris as the personality and the person, allied to the fact that it's London, which is, the global, one of the, global capitals. Is that possible we could get something similar in Greater Manchester or, in Sheffield or Liverpool? I don't know, John.
I think it's entirely possible. I think if you look at the figure of George Ferguson, the mayor of Bristol for the last 4 years, who's done very well at identifying himself with the city, being like Mr. Bristol. And I suspect this is why George Osborne is actually so keen on the mayoral model in the first place, because it does kind of attract these big figures who can push for investment, who can push for particular policies. There is kind of a flip side to that, which you also get the slightly eccentric figures like Boris, but also like people like Rob Ford, the ex-mayor of Toronto, who died a few weeks ago. He's not someone you could particularly have seen making at the national stage, but people seem quite happy to have a colourful character who pushes people over at football meets and so on as the mayor.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think this is certainly the way. I think there will be more enthusiasm for local politics when there is a face on it.
Yeah.
Because I think at the moment the problem is nobody knows who their councillor is, nobody knows who the council leader is, but everybody in London, not everybody, most people in London will know that Boris Johnson is the mayor, a friend of mine does tell that someone asked her if Tessa Jowell was mayor the other day, so it clearly doesn't cover the whole population. But I think mayors will certainly get people more engaged in this process, and I suspect that's one of the reasons behind the policy.
Yeah. I mean, Tom, you know, in sort of an awareness perspective, you know, when you're polling people and asking them about who they know and who they don't know, just give us a sense as to the, you know, the relevant awareness that, you know, national politicians have vis-a-vis local councillors, and obviously I suppose people like Boris and maybe George, you sit somewhere in between. What's the scale of recognition and awareness on that?
I think it's really poles apart, and you know, you have your national politicians really very well known, widely recognised, and often when you look at local elections, people, while some people may have a sort of great understanding of who their local mayor is or who their local councillor is, when they look at the ballot paper, they're often confronted with a raft of names they don't know and use their sort of party allegiances as proxies for that.
Yeah.
And in terms of popularity, sort of even within the national politicians, there's a huge discrepancy between those at the top of government, so David Cameron, George Osborne and Boris, compared to the rest of the party. You know, your Michael Goves, your Ian Duncan Smiths are just far less widely recognised and correspondingly far less widely liked as well.
I wonder your thoughts. This is slightly techie point, so for listeners, you know, you can zone out for the next minute or two while we talk about. But I wonder whether, you know, there's a critique that firstly, you know, elections by thirds is just an utterly bizarre scenario where, you know, anyone, every year with one fallow year, a third of the seats in a place is up for, you know, up for election, which I just think is weird personally, but, you know, get your own reflections on that. And secondly, we just have loads and loads of councillors, you know, per capita and per area. I wonder what your thoughts are, you know, where all in, all out elections, all at the same time. Birmingham, interestingly, I think will shift to that through the Kerslake review, and fewer councillors as well would be a way to sort of give local politicians, local councillors a bit more oomph and a bit more awareness because there's fewer of them and, you know, people are going out to vote. Why, you know, why vote in thirds? John, what's your...
It does have some odd side effects. I was in Birmingham a couple of weeks ago and the guy who was showing me around told me that they were about to go into purdah, and they're effectively in purdah for 6 weeks every year, which doesn't feel great for the accountability of the government of a major city.
Yeah.
But it also means, I said, so I'm not that familiar with the political situation in Birmingham, and I asked him, is anything likely to change? He just went, no, it's only a third of the councillors. It's incredibly difficult to have a major sea change.
Yeah.
And one side effect of that is it's incredibly difficult to push an administration out. If an administration is unpopular, you kind of have to chip away at it.
Yeah.
There can't be this kind of sort of big moment, like a sort of 1997 or a 1979 equivalent in the national politics. And I think that does have an impact on not only accountability, but also political enthusiasm.
Yeah. All council elections every 4 years, fewer councillors. David, what's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, it sounds plausible to me. I mean, I think more generally there does seem to be a kind of need to, I guess, consolidate kind of local government in different ways. And I think the move towards mayors, in part, are an attempt to kind of consolidate and think about what parts of the local government machinery kind of strike a chord with the electorate and what parts can be kind of rationalised. And yeah, I think, you know, moving towards a kind of uniform electoral strategy can make sense.
Yeah. Tom, what's your... Any polling on this? Any sort of insight into this? Or
I think the electorate, you know, from our sort of perspective as sort of political nerds, you know, we obviously find all elections exciting and interesting. But when you chat to the electorate, most of them find them extremely boring or at least difficult to get excited about. You know, ahead of the general election last year, it was certainly... noticeable, you know, how difficult many members of the public found it to get excited about that campaign, let alone local elections, which, you know, they may see as having less relevance to them.
Yeah. For the, you know, people can zone back in now as we move away from this particular issue. If you're familiar with voting by thirds and council numbers, councillor numbers, and all the rest of it. I want to pick up on the point you made slightly earlier on, David, about, and it's a good point, that a recognition that there's an urban challenge for the Conservatives at the, you know, at the national level, but also at the local level, and that's in some ways manifested through particularly thinking in a northern context, but it's not only in that, and in part provides some of the rationale for the Chancellor's led initiative around the northern powerhouse. I mean, slightly unfair question, but in a sense, you know, is it too early to see any of the gains? Are we likely to see any gains or any changes, any mood music around some of this, you know, in the election next week? Is it a longer game?
I think it is a longer game. I don't think that people are going to be going out and voting Conservative because of the Northern powerhouse. But I think where there are electoral gains, it won't be necessarily in the North or because the Tories are delivering on specific projects in the North.
Right.
But I think that it may benefit the Conservatives in the sense of the Northern powerhouse is a key part of the Tories' long-term economic plan. So the Northern powerhouse has become this kind of totemic example of Conservative competence, if you like. So it's not necessarily about particular projects or affecting particular areas. Nothing much has happened yet, really, in terms of, say, transport and infrastructure. But the more George Osborne talks about the Northern powerhouse and the government talks about the Northern powerhouse, I think it's now a key part of the government's kind of economic projection of itself, if you like. It's kind of like a more general example of why George Osborne always likes to wear fluorescent vests and go into factories. it feeds into that more general political drive that Conservatives have around competence, around the economy, even if the details don't always quite add up yet.
Yeah. John?
I mean, I was looking at polling on this earlier, and as recently as February, an Ipsos Mori survey found that, 49% of people in the north of England had not actually heard the phrase Northern powerhouse.
That's a bit depressing.
Those who had were generally pretty positive about it. People do seem to like the idea of devolving more control to local government and the idea of decisions about the north being taken in the north. But if, this has been a key phrase in the lexicon for 3 or 4 years now, and it's still not sort of trickled down to a large proportion of the electorate, I don't think it's very likely to swing many votes. I think what could happen is, we're probably talking, 10 years or more down the line, if it actually works as a policy and starts to sort of bring more economic activity to these cities and they've suddenly all got shiny new trams or whatever, then that will probably actually benefit the Conservative Party just by virtue of these cities getting richer and kind of working through some of the scars left by the Thatcher administration. But I think it is that kind of long-term agenda. I really can't see it affecting how people vote in May.
Yeah. Tom, is there any sense that, John's point about any cut through, any traction on the ground?
Yeah, I would completely agree with David and John that this is a long-term strategy. It's about economic competence. And, we at Comrades had very similar polling data showing that a large proportion had never heard of the Northern Powerhouse, but even those in the North who had heard of it didn't have any idea what it meant. That doesn't mean to say, as John said, that they don't think it's a good idea. And actually, people tend to be distrusting of politicians and what politicians promise. And actually for this to have any sort of long-term impact, people will need to see developments, see things changing around them, and then also crucially attribute those to the Conservatives. You can see things like Boris Spikes, and there's been a sort of debate as to who's actually responsible for introducing Boris Spikes, and whether it's Boris or Ken Livingstone, and similarly the Northern Powerhouse, whether the Conservatives ultimately get credit for anything that comes from that policy. That would be interesting.
I have a question, Tom, actually. Do you have any polling data on what voters kind of tend to associate, for the ones who have heard of the Northern Powerhouse, what they associate most closely with it? Because the government tends to speak of it in at least two kind of distinct senses.
At least two.
So one is the kind of infrastructure, new shiny roads, new shiny trains, etc., etc. The other one is, as John was saying, the devolution side of it, devolving power downwards. And they are... I mean, they're related, but they're conceptually distinct. And do you have any evidence on what voters kind of associate with it at all?
I think it's important to say that it is a very small proportion of voters who have heard of it and have some semblance of an idea of what it might mean.
Yeah.
But predominantly those people think of it as an infrastructure side of things. And actually, one of the criticisms that you often hear when you're travelling around the country doing focus groups is that people worry that it's an inconsistent sort of spend on infrastructure, and often there are sort of grumblings from other parts of the north that Manchester might get preferential treatment.
Or London,
for example. Or London. And actually whether everyone in the north sees benefits of the Northern Powerhouse policy is often a criticism.
Go on, John.
Sorry, I also wonder what impact it's having that there is still a significant chunk of northern politicians going around talking about how particular city deals or whatever are a terrible idea because they don't agree with where the boundary lies, or like Leeds doesn't have a city region deal yet because there's so much pressure to have something Yorkshire-wide, even Sheffield's already out of the picture. And you know, also people don't generally favour reforms that are going to put them out of a job.
No.
So as much as national government is going around talking about how the Northern Powers is going to change things, a lot of local leaders are probably pushing the opposite message.
But this, you know, this is somewhat of, you know, this is a part of the interesting area, because in a sense you have, crudely, you have a Conservative Chancellor prepared to do a deal with predominantly Labour local leaders. And then you have a national Labour leadership that is somewhat, maybe kind and be say it's ambivalent about the value of these places doing these sorts of deals. So it's all topsy-turvy. And, you know, I mean, what sort of message, how does that then play and translate into, you know, people on the street, other than they just don't care and they ignore it all? But
when I did this podcast around a year ago,
yes,
we were talking about this kind of conflict and how on both Tories and Labour, there were people both in favour and against that.
So yeah.
In Labour, you had Andy Burnham pushing very hard on the idea that the Greater Manchester deal was in some way bad for Greater Manchester,
indeed,
which never really got to the bottom of that, but no. Okay, it's a position. But so they were split down the middle, but there was at least, there wasn't just a position, there were two positions, but you could kind of point to what they thought, whereas now I don't get the sense that Labour have any position on this whatsoever, or indeed on a huge range of other issues. I kind of think it's not so much that they're kind of pulling away from this, it's just that they're not in the discussion at all.
No.
So I think, as you noted yourself, there are conversations going on between national government and Labour leadership within cities. But I don't sense that the Labour Party nationally has anywhere to go with this at all right now.
Interesting. David?
Yeah, I mean, there are certain policy areas where the Labour Party is quite conflicted over. As you say, this doesn't seem to be one of them. This is just...
They've not quite
got there yet. Mm. Yeah.
I mean, the other area interesting, I just get your thoughts on her. Other than, let's assume that it does more than just turnout. I wonder what your thoughts on how it'll affect the local electorate around... the cuts, you know, public sector cuts, you know, so you've seen quite a high profile spat between Cameron and his, you know, his local council saying, why are you doing this, why are you doing that? Well, it's because you're making us Prime Minister, you know, and that sort of stuff. And again, I wonder what the cuts agenda and seeing some of this play out, you know, what sort of effect that has on the local electorate, other than, you know, other than them then deciding not to vote at all. But if they do turn out, does that have any effect at all, or is that just absorbed and it doesn't really affect it? Tom, what's your sense of that?
I think certainly cuts are the predominant narrative when you chat to people about what's going on at a local level.
Yeah.
You know, that's people's primary interaction with government is bins being collected.
Yeah.
You know, library services, things like that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people do notice these things.
But isn't there satisfaction holding fairly constant, isn't it? I mean, or is that beginning to change now?
No, I think it's relatively stable. I think the thing with cuts is that it can sort of almost embolden both sides. So those who believe that they're being done for the right reasons, ultimately, you know, they may be difficult, but are leading us to a better place economically, likely to be emboldened by those. Whereas you sort of perhaps more on the Labour side of things who see cuts as flawed, you know, not getting to the bottom of the problem and, you know, creating inequalities and so on, are similarly emboldened that, you know, turn out and vote on the other side of things.
Yeah, quite. Yeah, John?
I think it's kind of factored in, isn't it? I don't know. I mean, we were talking about the national general election earlier, and I the whole New Statesman team sort of volunteered to work the overnight that night, and I was the guy charged with finding funny internet viral content, and it became clear at about 1 minute past 10 that my services were not required because it was not going to be a funny night for a left-wing magazine.
But they
kind of think, you know, we all sort of assumed that maybe the cuts would kind of hit the Tory vote in May 2015, when people are a lot more likely to engage with the issues in the general election. And they don't seem to have had any significant impact because people, the electorate, do still kind of accept the line that, you know, we overspent and it's all Labour's fault and so on, and this is now a necessary evil. If people weren't that fussed about the cuts last May, I just can't particularly see them being up in arms.
Right.
I mean, I suppose maybe about individual local issues, like about particular libraries closing, and there'll no doubt be a myriad of things around the country.
Yeah.
But in terms of the sort of national picture, I can't imagine it having a consistent impact. I don't know, Tom, if I'm totally wrong.
I think the long-term impact of Ian Duncan-Smith's actions over the last few weeks will be interesting to see, as to whether that challenges the narrative at all around cuts and whether people start to question their validity, not just in terms of economics, but also at a sort of moral level. Will be interesting. It's too early to tell at the moment, but that could be a challenge in the future.
David, you're gonna...
No, I mean, one of the key indicators for the kind of political significance of the cuts for me is actually that the Chancellor, in many regards, you could argue, has maybe exaggerated the cuts.
Indeed.
So, in fact, deficit reduction has been kind of much more mixed than was originally anticipated. Mm. You know, the Chancellor hasn't met all of his deficit reduction plans. And there are certainly people on the right of the political spectrum who say the cuts haven't gone nearly far enough. The Chancellor, notwithstanding the slightly mixed reality, the Chancellor has been quite keen to talk about austerity, the importance of austerity, the necessity of the cuts. And I think that demonstrates that for him, the cuts are not problematic politically. Otherwise, the language would have been a bit different.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. One of the things that struck me talking to Tony Travers recently about his work on the London boroughs over the and celebrating the fact that they've been around for 50 years. But one of the issues we talked about was when you get down to the kind of local authority or city level, essentially pragmatism outweighs politics in that. There's a job to be done, and that job needs to be done. And there aren't really very ideological ways about cleaning the bins or all the rest of it. We've heard that from other people. I just wonder whether those politics is more muted at the at the local level because there's such an overwhelming pragmatic element. It doesn't really matter whether Labour do this or Conservative do that, because really, there may be some changes at the edges, but at the core, they're both going to be doing the same sort of thing, which seems to be somewhat different than when you think about it at the national level. I don't know what you think about that, David. What's your, is pragmatism muting the political element at the local level?
I'm not sure about that. I mean, certainly historically, you've had very kind of ideological councils, in Liverpool
yes.
and so on, who became famous for their ideology.
They did.
And went beyond, the national party
they
at
did.
The time.
And Tony, in fairness to Tony, he recognised that, in a sense, was remarking on that period and then where we are today, which is partly a reaction or a rejection of those overt politics that took place in the 70s, 80s and early 90s.
Yeah, I guess the other, so that's one reservation I'd have about that point. The other reservation I'd have is that, especially if we kind of, I mean, particularly if you look at London, maybe if you think of local councils primarily kind of service delivery, not so much scope for difference there. But if you look at the kind of London model a bit more as the kind of cheerleader, someone who's going to draw in investment, who's going to draw in foreign investors and foreign visitors and so on, then you can have quite a different outlook on the kind of, on the benefits or not of that.
But would you say Johnson and Livingstone had different perspectives? I'd be interested in what your thought on that, and get John and Tom to kind of reflect on that. Were they fundamentally, they seem to be both in the world city, we need to grow and be as competitive as we possibly can box.
It's, as much as anything, that may be reflective of the fact that that was the kind of mayor that the London electorate were going to elect.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean you're always going to get a mayor that's so pragmatic in other cities.
That's fair enough. That's true. John?
But, you were talking about Liverpool under Derek Hatton in the 80s, where it was this very ideological left-wing council. The GLC under Ken Livingstone was seen in exactly the same light. Yet when he came to power, he did run London in a kind of pretty international capital-friendly manner. Now, I don't get the sense that he's become less left-wing with age, because look at the kind of slightly odd stuff he's coming out with now in terms of Labour's foreign policy. But, when he was mayor, he was still all about sort of, we've got to build our banking sector, we've got to attract the real estate magnates. So I do wonder whether it's something about the job of mayor that kind of pushes people towards this kind of central reservation. And there has been a lot of continuity between the Livingstone and Johnson regimes in terms of policy.
Mm.
As we've already alluded to, a lot of the reforms that we now associate with Johnson, like a lot of the programs like the Olympics, like the bikes, are actually holdovers from the Livingstone regime.
Mm.
Can I just come back to you, just a question really, John? I guess I wonder to what extent Livingstone's kind of outlook was determined by the kind of political realities of the day, with New Labour so dominant, obviously. And I mean, do you think that if Ken Livingstone were mayor, say, today, under a Corbyn Labour Party, would he be so pragmatic? Or I don't know what you think.
It's difficult to say. I mean, He was elected as Labour's candidate in 2004, but in the year 2000, he didn't get the nomination and he got himself elected as an independent.
Yeah.
So however dominant the sort of, whatever you want to call that sort of pro-finance ideology was in the early 2000s, Livingstone had carved himself a niche outside it and still got elected, and yet he still kind of followed that line once in power. I think it's just that, you know, when you're running a city, there are certain things you need to make happen, like economic growth, like jobs, like housing and so on. And a lot of those things are easier when you can attract investment.
So does that then have an effect on, you know, people's willingness to vote at the local, you know, local elections? Because in a sense, you're not really advocating, you know, you don't have a stark choice or a choice in some respects. It's slightly more of this and maybe a little bit less than that, but broadly we're both doing the same sort of thing, which then lends yourself to personality and you become presidential in nature rather than necessarily, you know, the typical way we do it. Tom, I don't know what's your thought on that?
I mean, we've talked at length already about low engagement with local elections and people not necessarily paying attention to the fine print. If you look at London, the things that people care about most at the moment, policy-wise, are housing, transport and security. And there is some scope for sort of politicking within that, I suppose. But something like the EU referendum hasn't really become an issue in terms of the London mayorals, and Zach Goldsmith versus Sadiq Khan's stance on that issue hasn't really sort of come to the fore too much.
Yeah, because, you know, what's quite interesting, obviously we'll have an election in May in Liverpool, actually, for, you know, for the mayor, and, you know, Joe will stand and it probably will, you know, probably will, I will win. And, you know, I think he comes probably from the, you know, the slightly left a bit of the, you know, the traditional Labour Party. And yet in when he's been the mayor, you know, I think he's held a fairly conventional line in terms of that city. He's been more than willing to, you know, to engage with a Conservative government and try to, you know, strike a city deal that, you know, benefits not only the city and the city region. I don't know, it's just kind of interesting around the degree to which the nature of the job constrains the, you know, the ability nowadays, at least, to be overtly political, which I think then as a kind of follow-on reflection get you to think about, you know, we have three biggish mayors now, obviously the London one being the biggest, and then cities, at least, we have the Liverpool mayor and the Bristol mayor. You know, in 12 months' time, we could have another five, we could have another six. I wonder whether what you think that might do, and are we hopeful that that in itself will drive the electorate out of their, you know, their seats and out of their houses next year to vote? John, can we be hopeful?
Possibly. I think people are more likely to engage with a mayoral system where, for all the reasons we've discussed, it is a bit more visible, there's more personality to it, you can see you're voting for or against a particular person. One of the slightly odd sides of it, though, which is not quite an answer to your point, but I'm going to make it anyway, is that, you know, some of the city regions that are kind of in the pipeline now are the West of England one, which is what used to be Avon, or Greater Bristol, as one might call it, and effectively Merseyside. So the mayors of Liverpool and Bristol are going to have bigger mayors above them. Now, I think who's answerable to who is going to be very much dependent on the nature of the deals as they go through. But it does mean there is going to be this sort of tug of war. And that already exists to an extent in London, where we've got borough mayors like Jules Pipe in Hackney or Robin Wells in Newham. But it feels to me like a slightly different thing when you have a figure who is the mayor of Liverpool and then a metro mayor above them, because Liverpool is the one with the brand name.
Yeah.
So I just kind of, I'm interested to know how that relationship is going to work out.
Yes, that's a very good point. Tom?
I think in terms of the mayoralty and its impact on sort of public interest in politics, it's interesting, isn't it? I mean, even in London with Boris Johnson, who, whatever you think of him as a politician, does have a sort of appeal beyond politics and does sort of get to get people excited about politics in a way that perhaps they might not otherwise. But even with him around, that hasn't had a massive impact on turnout at local elections and at mayoral elections. And so whether that will change at a local level where, for all they may have a higher profile than council leaders at the moment, they're unlikely to have a higher profile than sort of Boris Johnson did around the 2012 Olympics. Whether that has an impact on turnout, I would say, is slightly more questionable.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what the turnout is, you know, this time round, with, you know, profile politicians, but they're nowhere near in the same way as Boris is. But, David, what's your thought on, you know, where we are with these kind of mayors? But I think, you know, in 12 months' time, with the prospect of another six, how that might regenerate and rejuvenate local politics?
I guess, I mean, there's the point around kind of personalities, which has, you know, already been made, and to what extent that, you know, affects turnout or not. I guess there's also the question around, you know, the new mayoralties becoming kind of established features of a political landscape. I mean, you know, will a new mayor rejuvenate interaction with a local electorate, or will the local electorate go, I don't really know what's going on here, and maybe not interact as much? So right. Is it a novelty factor, or is it a kind of a lack of familiarity which will dominate?
I suppose. Certainly with police and crime commissioner elections, we've seen very little engagement with those.
I think there's also a question about what is happening to the definition of the word mayor, because two of the regions that were announced in the budget that they're going to get their own mayors are Greater Lincolnshire, which is what we once called Lincolnshire, but includes the bits that got lopped off the Humberside, and East Anglia, which is Norfolk, Suffolk, Cambridgeshire. The last time there was a single individual responsible for East Anglia was in the early 10th century, when it's King Guthrum II. And now there is going to be a figure who is elected to kind of oversee that entire region. Now, my suspicion is the reason that's come through is because all the city regions are more likely to vote for Labour mayors than Tory ones, and there's probably an attempt to throw a bit of red meat to the Tory backbenchers and sort of get some of those seats for the Conservatives. But it does mean that it's going to be a slightly different definition of a slightly different job definition from the urban mayor that we're used to.
Yeah, quite. Maybe that's a secret. Maybe we should not call them mayors. We should call them kings. Maybe that would get people out to vote if they felt they were voting for the king of their area. I don't know. That's not a policy position that the centre of the city is currently subscribes to. But you never know. King of Greater Manchester, maybe, or King of Lincolnshire might have a broader appeal.
Glad this idea didn't come out when Boris or Ken were still running for
it. Because that would have, they would have definitely taken that up and run with it. Okay, well, just before we close, let's come back to where we started from, and just get a sense from you as to how will we know, I suppose, Friday of next week, or Friday after the local elections in May, how will we know who's done well and who hasn't, and what sort of yardsticks would we use on that? Tom, just give us a, from a, you know, they'll all be claiming they'll have done well, but how will we, you know, from your perspective, what should we be looking for?
I think the important thing is to compare with 2012, the comparable set of local elections, and Labour actually did pretty well in those.
Right.
And I think I certainly know that Labour was sort of expecting to lose potentially up to a couple of hundred seats around the country. If they lose less than that, that might be a good result. But it'll also be important to look at certain sort of key bellwether councils, I think in particular places with large student populations where we might expect Corbyn to do well based on his support base, and see if Labour can sort of progress in those. But it'll also be interesting, I think, from my perspective, to look at some of the smaller parties, looking at UKIP and the Lib Dems, and see how they fare after last year's general election. I think will be really interesting.
Mm. John, how will we know?
I think Sadiq Khan has to be the favourite in London. If he doesn't win the London mayoralty, I think that's a very bad sign for Labour. I think if Joe Anderson doesn't get re-elected in Liverpool, where last time around he got something like 59% of the vote, that's going to be an incredibly bad sign for Labour, but I really don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah. David?
In terms of a mayoral vote, it looks like the incumbents, in Liverpool and Bristol, are favourites. In London, Sadiq looks like he's ahead at the moment. But the extent to which that's reflective of a national picture, I think, is quite broken, perhaps more so than usual, particularly because of the state of the Labour Party at the moment. Mm. I don't think a victory for Sadiq would be particularly reflective of the state of affairs for, you know, Corbyn and the Labour Party.
Yeah, it's an interesting point.
I think it's very difficult to imagine what Labour having a good election looks like. You can kind of picture things that would be a terrible sign for them, but it's difficult to pinpoint something that would be a sign that Corbyn is doing well, which is not great for the Labour leadership.
My guests today have been Tom Clarkson, John Elledge and David Kirkby. Thank you very much. Thank you for listening to this episode of City Talks, brought to you by the Centre for Cities. We're an independent, non-partisan think tank dedicated to understanding and improving city economies. For more on our research and events programme, including our extensive back catalogue, please visit our website, centreforcities.org.